You're making more money than you've ever made in your life. Say you're in the top 10% now, but you're still treating your capital like you're in the bottom 50%.
The most costly thing in your life is not controlling the banking function.
A high premium isn't an expense. It's the financial horsepower you didn't even know existed.
If you don't control the banking function in your life, you're missing out on the most profitable business in the world.
It's because you had a different mentality. You had a wealth warehouse mentality.
The question should be, how can I afford that?
If you're paying $15,000 to the company and they're going to give you $29,000 back, when do you want to stop paying $15,000? There's only two other ways you would have paid for that item in the first place.
Put very simply, it's just a great place to store money. And all that money, that all that interest that you're going to recapture by practicing.
And the worst thing you could possibly do is, hey, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And this is the Wealth Warehouse Podcast. All right. Well, I've got a new setting. Can you hear the airplanes going?
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's not bad though. In a sense.
It's a beautiful day in Alaska. Look at this giant mountain right behind me. This is pretty amazing.
Beautiful. Is that Mount McKinley?
Yeah. It's actually a mountain of snow. It's just a pile of snow. It's an optical illusion, everybody. It's still Minnesota. Next to Kansas, one of the flattest states in the union. Yeah. It looks cool though.
Yeah.
No, I came down here to the flying club today because we got some work being done in the house, a little loud. So got out of there, new scenery, came out here. It's a beautiful day. Maybe I should be flying, but I'm working. Why do we work so much?
Well, because we don't have arrival syndrome. How about that? To quote Nelson.
Yeah. That's for sure. What's arrival syndrome?
So Nelson Nash talks about it in the book, which I did put right there to add to my background. But it's kind of like getting used to where you're at. Like, hey, I've made it. I'm a millionaire now, and now I can kind of lay back on my laurels and just chill out. And it kind of goes against how I think about stuff. Is you're not growing, you're dying. It's dangerous, and most people think they've arrived in knowledge. Oh, there's nothing I could possibly know, about finance, or I know everything, whatever, about aviation, about whatever subject. But there's always something else to know, and you can always learn something from somebody else. And I think, if you go through our journey in this podcast, we are constantly, we talk to clients all the time, and they're like, man, you said this on episode whatever, and that's what did it for me. I was 85 episodes in before I had this like light bulb moment. And that's perfectly fine. And that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, anybody who's been a client for any amount of time, or if you've listened to any number of podcast episodes and you're still listening, you obviously have not hit the arrival syndrome. You don't have that because there's always something more you can learn. I was just having a conversation with another pilot in the bar, and because they have some pilots show up on Friday mornings, just have coffee and hang out and talk. And the guy has been flying for 30 years, just general aviation, just for fun. And we were talking about, hey, maybe going up and flying together because we could both learn something from each other. Like, it's always better to go fly with somebody else who knows what they're doing because, one, there's redundancy in the system, there's more safety, and you got somebody to talk to. It's not so quiet, and you can learn something from somebody else. Somebody's experience, or two heads are better than one, right? As I say. But yeah, so the arrival syndrome, you mentioned arrival syndrome. That's kind of, it's really the topic today. Is there's a lot of people out there listening, and you're probably making more money than you'd ever made before in your life. I don't know, every time I talk to pilots, the commercial flying industry, every time you talk to a pilot, they're basically making more money, the most money they've ever made in their life. And as people age, that's typically the way it goes. Your prime earning years being in your 50s, and most people are going to hit the top 10% at some point in their life. Like, I think the stat is over 50% of Americans will be in the top 10% of income earners, which right now, I just looked it up, as an individual is about 150K a year. As a family, it's a little over 200,000 a year. So if that's you, you're in the top 10%. So this episode is definitely for you.
Yeah. And that also means something different depending on what part of the country you live in.
Absolutely. I know in Minnesota, the stats to live a comfortable life with a family of four, it takes $275,000 a year. Yeah. Times have changed.
Inflation's a bitch, as they say.
Who says that? As Paul says.
I think my mother used to say that.
Yeah. I think my dad used to say that about a lot of things. So a lot of people have really arrived. Like they look at themselves, they say, well, hey, 5 or 10 years ago, if I saw myself in the position I'm in now, I would have said, oh man, I've arrived. And when I get to that point, I'll be making this much money and I'll actually know what to do with it. But the fact is, how much money you make has nothing to do with how much your financial intelligence grows, unless you've been intentional about it. And most people aren't, because you're busy making money, right? You don't want to carve out the time to try to learn more about it.
Correct. Yeah, no doubt. I'm thinking, you made me think of a couple of people that I've met over the years. And one of them was our, Carmel and Anthony's dentist in El Paso, Texas, owned multiple businesses, was into real estate, like a very intelligent guy, very strategic. And his office was immaculate. His employees were, it was a well-oiled machine. And you could tell that he was intimately involved in the operations side as well. And then you meet people that same level of education, seemingly the same level of intelligence. Like I look at doctors and I'm like, some of these people are seriously brilliant people. And a lot of the ones that I've known over the years are actually also very down to earth people as well. But, or maybe there's something else, like a CPA or a lawyer or whatever, but they don't know what they don't know about money. And maybe they have no interest in it. And that could go for anybody. It doesn't have to be a professional. It could go for anybody. They have no interest in it. They're just like, I'm going to do what everybody else does. I'm going to go on the 401k trail, the IRA trail. I'm going to, pay cash for everything, the Dave Ramsey trail. And that's all fine. If you think, if the end result for you is like everybody else around you, but if you want something more, something deeper, then, this is the path that we're on. So that's what we see with our clients. They want prosperity, they want security, they want legacy, and they want to enjoy their capital now as well. So then we just show them how to implement this process. And it has changed people's lives, literally. Because we have clients doing things that they never otherwise would have done without implementing the process of infinite banking. So it's you love to see it.
Yeah. And one of the problems is, people don't realize it, but they're pass-through entities to the bank because they don't control any of the banking function whatsoever. Their paycheck gets auto-deposited into somebody else's bank. And that bank, people don't understand the banking system either and how much value that creates for a bank, even though it's your money, right? I mean, I guess, if you live by the adage that possession is 9/10 of the law, it's not your money because it's in the bank. But for all intents and purposes, we know we have access to what's in our bank account. So it's your money, but it's creating a ton of value for the bank and not for you. You're earning whatever you're earning on it, which is typically nothing. So the solution for that, for us, is infinite banking, is creating your own warehouse of wealth, right? And it starts with really just changing your mind and saying, well, I could keep my money over here in somebody else's bank, create all these benefits for them, or maybe there's a better way where I can maybe get some of those benefits for myself. Is there a better way? And the answer is yes. And you and I have been doing it for years.
Yeah. And it starts with thinking like a banker. You go around, and Nelson talks about it in the book, you go around to like even small little towns, but you look at that bank and it might be the nicest building in that little town square. It's like, oh, there's the town hall, which was paid for with bank money, your tax dollars, and then bank money, or maybe insurance company money. But then that bank is just a good looking building generally. Like it's, you go in the big cities, you go up to in Tyson's Corner in Northern Virginia. So if you're outside of D.C., 20, 30 years ago, Tyson's Corner was literally nothing. And now you go out there and it's all defense contractors, huge, big, you know, Chase, whatever banks are over there, huge skyscrapers. And it's just, it's bizarre. West, you know, just west of DC. But again, they're doing all of that with your money and giving you nothing, next to nothing for it. Just ask anyone who's had an emergency. The bank.
Maybe you get free checking.
Maybe you get free checking. Maybe you do.
Maybe.
That's something we enjoyed, as we took for granted with like USAA or Navy Federal, but these people pay like fees for checking accounts and stuff. That was totally bizarre to me when I opened up an account.
And it costs a lot to get a checkbook at some banks.
It was just like, I was like, I have to have, you know, direct deposit and stuff like that to avoid the fees. And I was like, see you later.
And you got to have a minimum account balance. So, which basically renders some of your liquidity unusable, because they won't let you take it out, because, hey, you got to keep a certain amount in here so we can continue leveraging it and creating value for ourselves off of it.
Right. And so, you know, real quick, you do have to ask yourself, why are they doing that? They're doing that so they can control more people's money over a longer duration of time. So everyone has to have $1,000 minimum balance or whatever it is. Well, they have 50,000 members. That's a lot of capital that they can inflate and then lend out.
Yeah. Yeah. And capital that they can predict that's always going to be there.
Always going to be there. That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's a mind shift, man. So I was having this conversation this morning. It was really fun. I had a father who has a whole life policy on one of his adult sons because he was uninsurable. He and I started working together, talking years ago, and went through underwriting, uninsurable. His wife was uninsurable. He said, well, I've got a son. And his son happened to have a convertible term policy with another company. So he was able to convert that into a whole life that he owns, the father. And now he's trying to get his next youngest son on board, who's all, you know, like 32, 33 years old. And it was fun to see the differences when we're talking to him. And the son is looking at everything as an expense. That, I pay cash for stuff. I don't want to borrow. I don't want to borrow and accrue any interest. And how much would I have to pay? I don't want to pay more than X dollars a month for life insurance. And, you know, the dad says, I wish I could pay more, but I can't because I'm uninsurable. And that's why the dad is working so hard to get a policy on the son that the dad can own and fund and leave to the son when the dad graduates from this earth. Like, it was so cool. And this dad, just kind of a side story, he planted an oak tree in his backyard after we started working together and he read Nelson's book. And he said, this tree is something that's going to create a legacy for my family. And it represents what I'm trying to do here for my family financially, which is so cool. Yeah.
It's also going to create leaves.
Great leaves. And acorns.
And acorns.
Yeah. So it creates more work. But you know what? With more capital, with more money, maybe comes more work, because now you're at the point of needing to protect it, not just accumulate it.
Right? Yeah, I love that. And I feel incredibly lucky that I discovered the infinite banking concept when my children were still in grammar school, right? So they've heard me talk about it now for 6-7 years. And they're, you know, so from age, age 8 or age 9 to now that they're, you know, teenagers. So it's like, and I actually asked them yesterday, I was like, you know, future spouses, right? Like, first thing, engagement, maybe we're getting life insurance policies on those people. Just so you know. It's one of my requirements for marriage. Oh, you want money for this wedding? Sign here.
Right. Isn't that what David Stearns, who is Nelson Nash's son-in-law,
tells
that story? The first thing when David asked for his daughter's hand in marriage, he said, do you have life insurance? You have to have life insurance for me to say yes. And talk about a dad protecting his daughter. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. You're not going to leave my daughter, broke and alone if something happens to you.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah. Well, cool. You know, now, then there's this whole discussion on opportunity cost, which, again, like everything we're talking about, I talked about with this father and the son today. And it was so good to see it. And the father has so much wisdom that the son doesn't really think is wisdom at this point, because the son knows what the son knows. And it's not necessarily his fault. He's just never tried to rethink his own thinking around this information. But then you bring up opportunity cost. I mean, what is opportunity cost? The biggest light bulb moment for me was when Nelson says you're financing every single purchase you make. You're either borrowing money, paying interest, or you're paying cash and giving up interest you could have earned for the rest of your life. Imagine that.
That is the one thing that people need to understand at a very basic level. And I actually said that to I was talking to a guy from college today, right? So a guy that's, you know, known me for over 20 years. And I was like, you know, this is the first year. He's like, what should I do? And I was like, well, you need to read this book, but let me just tell you a little bit about it. One of the first things that you need to reconcile in your mind is that you finance everything you buy. Literally everything. And we talked about the paying cash, and he didn't object. He was just like, oh, I totally get it, right? You have to, as Nelson says, right, you always have to consider the alternative use of money.
Yeah.
So if you pay cash for that car, guess what? That's great. You own the car. You have the note, but you no longer have the earning potential of those dollars, right? They're gone. Same thing if you're financing. If you didn't have the discipline, we've talked about this ad nauseum on the podcast, but if you haven't had the discipline to save for that car over 5 years or whatever, now, and you have to go finance it through the dealership, right? So you're borrowing money and paying interest. So that's the other thing, right? And that's what most people do. Most people don't pay cash for cars.
No, but some do. And I think if you ask that person, would you rather be able to earn interest on this $50,000, or would you rather have that car? That's the choice that they're making right now. I can either put this money to work earning, or I can go have this new truck. Well, if you do it the way we do it, through the infinite banking concept, and you first capitalize your own dividend paying whole life insurance policy, you get both. You get to continue earning on that $50,000 for the rest of your life, and you can have that truck.
Yeah. We did an episode pretty early, Dave. I don't know which episode it was, but it was like the saver, the debtor, and the wealth creator. It was one of the first 10, maybe, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Way back in 2022.
You know what I just learned? I just learned you could filter podcast episodes from oldest to newest on Apple Podcast. I didn't know that. So if any of you are listening, you don't have to admit you didn't know this, but if you want to search one of our old podcasts, instead of scrolling 200 down the list, just sort oldest to newest.
Right.
There you go. Okay.
But we talked about that. And there's a PowerPoint presentation. There's a few presentations on that probably floating around too. But it's it's clear. It's clear that saving is good, right? But there's a difference between saving and capitalizing. Being in debt is generally considered bad, you know, because a lot of people have bad debt. Bad debt's credit cards, you know. Maybe high interest
consumer
rate,
debt.
Used car loans, consumer debt, right? Not all debt is bad. But Nelson's point was, what if there was a way you could recapture that interest that you've been just paying to other people's financing systems, other people's banks for your entire life? What if you could, is that something that would be interesting to you? And of course, yes, of course it's interesting, right? And it's not unbelievable once you understand the mechanics. And that's the other thing that Nelson said. Understanding the mechanics of whole life insurance is paramount to understanding why it works. Yeah, infinite banking doesn't have to use whole life, but it works best with it, right? And I'm sorry again. Sorry, it's whole life insurance. Super boring, super guaranteed, no tax, really good dividends, death benefit, privacy. I don't know. It's terrible.
Yeah. Terrible. And that's, I always use that. And I use that on this young man I was talking to this morning, is that, I may be an idiot, but I own 15 policies. Maybe I'm stupid, or maybe I know what I'm talking about, because I put more into life insurance premiums than anybody I know who's my client. I know other people who put a lot more into their policies, into premium than I do. And I want to get to that level someday. And I will. But yeah, there's a lot of smart people doing this. And they're not all high earners, but a lot of them are.
Yeah. You're going to do it at your level. But you can't pay enough premium. Once you understand what it's doing for you, you know, again, and I've owned whole life insurance since 2003. So March of 2003, I got my first, it was a $250,000 policy with a aviation clause and military clause and all that stuff. Non-dividend paying. But I looked at, it was just like, yep, I need this, whatever. My mom said it was a good idea. And there it was, you know, it was like $130 a month that was just going away. And I never tapped it for a policy loan, owned that policy from 03 to 2019. When I 1035'd it into new ones. Yeah. It wasn't all for,
there you go.
All for naught.
It's because you had a different mentality. You had a wealth warehouse mentality where you're not buying insurance, you're capitalizing a system. And that's really the difference. You know, people who, when you start talking about this, they think, oh, it's insurance, insurance, insurance. Yeah, that's a component of it. But really what you're doing is you're capitalizing a system. The insurance is kind of like, it comes along for the ride. And that's great that it's there, but you don't get to touch the insurance until, you know, you graduate and your beneficiaries get to. But it's everything else involved during your lifetime that you get to control, you get to own. And yeah, it's a system you're creating for yourself. And like the father I was talking to today kept restating to his son, I'm building something that I want to hand down to you guys. I want to leave something for you. He was talking legacy. He never said the word legacy, but he was talking legacy in every single thing he was saying. One of the most interesting questions the son said, well, how much is enough? Don't you have enough? Still doesn't get it. I'm thinking, man, that's not an abundance mindset, right? It's a rethinking your thinking. You got to start thinking abundance and creating that for your heirs.
Yeah, and it's just a lack of understanding, right? It's just like, you know, it's mindset, right? You know, there's some education that needs to be done there. Obviously, you get to read the book, you get to listen to some content. You have to think too. You just have to sit down and think about it. Like it's not difficult to see once you understand the mechanics that, yeah, the process of infinite banking works. And then when you overlay it with whole life insurance, it really works, right? Again, it's kind of like Dave Ramsey with whole life insurance in the middle, right? That's kind of how it is. But it's mindset, wow. Right? Like an abundance mindset is, you know, we always grew up saying, you know, I wanted a go-kart when I was a kid. Like, oh, we can't afford that, right? The question should be, how can I afford that? And that's kind of the difference in mindsets of that kind of, my mom used to say, everyone's broke just at a different level. But, you know, how do I pay for this becomes, how do I finance this through my system? So they go from like, you know, high school level to master's degree level of understanding of how money works. If you create the value first, capitalize a system of policies first, you can do whatever you want after.
Yeah,
the worst thing you could yourself.
Exactly. And the worst thing you could possibly do is spend down your hard-earned dollars. You need your hard-earned dollars to start working just as hard for you as you did for them. And this is the best place to start that. It's not the end. Right? It's not the only thing you're going to do, but it's the foundation. It's where that money goes right away. So you know you've captured it permanently. It's earning for you for the rest of your life, even while you get to access it and put it to work elsewhere, whether it's buying a car, buying a vacation property, or starting a business.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, everyone probably has what they consider their safe money. You know, it's their emergency fund. Probably it's in a savings account somewhere. Maybe they have a vacation fund or a tuition fund, and they're siloing it, right? They're just putting it over there, and it's earmarked for something. It's earmarked for one thing. So we basically just changed that silo into a different silo. Like this silo was built in 1905. This one is more modern and it's more intelligent and it's got air conditioning and it's, you know, it's got a robot that does everything for you, right? That's what the dividend paying whole life insurance with the infinite banking concept does. It's kind of just a, it's a better place to silo money, except you can, you know, use the grain while you're storing it. Does that make sense? I'm not a farmer, yep. But.
Yeah. I don't know that. Yeah. You leverage it and you let it continue to grow.
Yeah, I suppose that's how it is, right? You're not using your own grain. Your own grain stays protected. You're using somebody else's grain and, you know, eating that, feeding your cattle.
Yeah, and yours not only is protected, but continuing to compound and get bigger and bigger.
Grass-fed, corn-finished, yummy. Yeah, it could. It makes some whiskey. Yeah, that's true. And I think, well, you know, Dave, that's, most people haven't thought about money like this. They take money, goes to the checking account, and then they spend it. Or it goes over here, then they spend it on whatever thing it was, vacation, you know, tuition, whatever. The difference between somebody doing that, so what the wealth creator does, or the wealth warehouse listener, wealth warehouse client, is they deploy capital strategically from their warehouse, from their policies. And they know in the back of their mind that that money is still there compounding in the background. It's over here doing that, whatever the heck that thing was. It was vacation. It was an investment opportunity. Most of the time, it's one of those two things. People seem to be using it for vacations and they repay. One of my newest clients did it last year. He paid for his Alaska vacation with a policy loan. It's brilliant. IBC in action. But a lot of people, the other thing they're doing is that they're deploying capital to an investment from this wealth warehouse, from their system of policies. Or maybe they just have one policy. It's their first one. But it's done. It's simply changing. We're still doing everything else that everyone else does. We still invest. We still spend money, still do all these things. The difference is where the money, the bulk of it, originates from and returns to. That's the only thing we're changing in this equation. And again, I'm sorry, Dave Ramsey, that this is whole life insurance, but, you know, it is, and it works great.
Yeah, find something better to bank with on the personal level, and I'm happy to listen to it. I'm happy to check it out, but I've never found anything better. You know, people say, well, you know, if I'm going to borrow money, how am I going to pay that back? How am I going to pay my loans back? And my question is, well, there's only two other ways you would have paid for that item in the first place, either borrow somebody else's money to pay or save up for it. So how is that any different? You're going to pay it back by doing one, by saving up for it, like you most likely would have before you bought the item. So you just continue to save up for the next car. You're just saving it in a better place by just repaying that loan. By the time you have it repaid, you've got more available now than you had when you started repaying that loan, you know, originally, and you're ready to go buy the next car.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just gets better with age. Like, you're going to be able to do more, a second car, a third car, whatever. It's just recycling the money over and over and over. So I often tell people this too. It's like, we're going to do all this without your spending any more money than you're capitalizing now somewhere else. It's going to be
exactly
the same money.
Yeah, you don't have to go out and make additional money to do this. We take what you're doing already and just figure out how to redirect that capital. That's it. So, you know, and we create a premium around that. What does Nelson say about paying premium? You know, you pay high premium relative to your income. So maybe, $500 a month would be high to somebody, and $10,000 a month wouldn't be high to somebody else. It's all based on your income. And this high premium is actually one of the features. It's not a bug. It's not a con. It's not a downside of what we're doing here. It's a feature because there's very few limits on how much you can pay.
I think when you get that level of understanding, kind of like we have and all of our clients, is that that's an attribute of this. It's like I can, you know, there's really no limit to how much premium you can pay, except, you know, how much income can you actually produce? I mean, there is a limit. I shouldn't say that. There is a limit, but it's going to be based on your income. But But there's really no limit to how much money you can make. Dave, what makes whole life insurance special is that it's a private contract between you and the company. So private people contracting with other private entities. It's not a qualified plan. We're not subject to those rules. I can't just, I don't even track these things anymore, but I can only put X amount of dollars in a Roth. I can only put X amount of dollars in my 401k. The catch-up thing starts at age 50 and I can put this much more in or whatever. I'm deployed to a combat zone, so I can put this much more, you know, whatever it is. There's none of that, right? There's no constraint really whatsoever except the amount of money you're currently making. And generally 15 to 20%. After that, the underwriter's going to be like, well, where's this premium coming from? Because they don't want you to, they want you to pay the premium. It should be manageable, but also meaningful, right? As you like to say.
High income earners can pay up to 30% other income most times.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, there's a, you can put a lot towards it. And that, you know, that premium is going to feel uncomfortable until you really understand what you're doing. Until you understand you're not, it's not an expense. It's capitalizing. You're capitalizing your system.
Yeah. I mean,
and it gets easier every single year.
No doubt. And I would say this, you know, if these people realized that shortly into this journey, every dollar that they're paying in premium is going to produce a buck and a half of cash value, the only regret they're going to have someday in the future is that that premium wasn't twice as
big. Yeah, I got to point that out because the father I was talking to today brought the illustration for his son's policy, and he was showing it to his other son. And the son said, well, if I inherited like a policy like this, you know, in 20 years, can I just stop paying it and pull the money out? I was like, yeah, of course you can. And then I pointed at it and I said, but if you're paying $15,000 to the company and they're going to give you $29,000 back, when do you want to stop paying $15,000? He just laughed. He's like, oh, you got me. I see what you're saying.
Never.
Yeah, never. Because every year gets better than the last.
I'll buy that from you if you don't want it anymore.
Exactly. In fact, Dad, put that in your will that if the son doesn't want to keep the policy, contact Dave. He'll buy the policy from you. Yeah.
Put very simply, it's just a great place to store money, just to put money.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the
Makes
point.
It's a great warehouse.
It's just a great place to put it. And you know, that was the point I was making earlier today on an intro call was just, you know, Tammy and I, this is not the only thing we do with our money. It's just the first thing that we do with it. And he's like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And he sees it, right? He sees, and I talked to him personally through like, hey, my down payment for my house was life insurance, cash value policy loans. I repaid those after we sold three properties that we had acquired through our Army careers. And then I built my pool with life insurance, cash value policy loans. So I used the same dollars theoretically multiple times in a short amount of time.
Yeah. Yep. And capitalizing your system takes time. You know, but you're buying back that banking function from commercial banks that own that process in your life. So how much of the banking function do you want to control?
Yeah. And all that money, all that interest that you're going to recapture by practicing IBC, that will be yours to enrich you and your family forever, generation after generation. So if you're the generation that's starting this, that's the most difficult time in IBC is the capitalization phase. You know, your level of knowledge is probably low, right? You're still kind of questioning, oh, is this really a good idea? And of course, we know it's a good idea, but we can't. I told him that today too. I was like, I can't teach this to you. You have to catch it. And there's people catch it in different ways, right, Dave? Like some people like the legacy piece. Some people like the, oh, I'm protecting money from the government piece. You know, there's all different angles, but you get all of them, regardless of what you like.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, all right, man. Well, let's wrap it up. I'm about to get kicked out of this room. So I might go do some mountain climbing for the afternoon.
So funny.
Get a good workout.
What an optical illusion.
Yeah, that's nice. But all right. Everybody, hope you enjoyed. If you guys got any questions, just reach out to Paul and I directly, and we will be happy to take your questions, respond to your emails, whatever it is, or you know, find some time on our calendar. So Looking forward to seeing you all next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.